Hi, I'm glad to be here today, and I'm glad you're here today. So I'm going to talk today about anti- and pro-tobacco messages on older adults and their perception of risk of cigarettes and tobacco and their perception of benefits of cessation. I'd like to credit my team, Katie Brown Johnson. She's in the audience. She's from Stanford. And Nicholas Sheehan, Anna Barrett Peterson, and Mary Hunter, they couldn't be here today, but they're still sending me emails with the hot off the press data. I'll have to read the demographics from my phone. So we have nothing to disclose, and we've been funded by NIH, FDA. We are one of the TCOR groups at UCSF. That's the Tobacco Center on Regulatory Science. So some background is that the absolute negative health burden from smoking is greatest in the population over 55. However, they are the population that is least studied and has the least amount of focus. Of all of the TCORs, they've funded millions and millions of dollars, 15 centers, and this is the only study that's looking at older smokers. So really, the theme of this is who's interested in older smokers. As we talk about this, it's not tobacco control, it's not public health, but the tobacco industry is very interested in older smokers. So older smokers are the least likely to quit of any age group. Some more background is that quitting smoking by 50 halves their risk of lung cancer. Quitting smoking immediately decreases cardiovascular risk, but older age is positively correlated with rationalizing beliefs about smoking cessation. That the older you are, the more rationalization you have about why you shouldn't quit smoking. Older smokers have a greater unrealistic optimism about their risks than any other age group, and those that are aware of the risks of smoking and the benefits of cessation are 12 times more likely to quit. So that's what makes this important, really understanding what impacts their perceptions of risks and benefits. Because when we can get through, they're much more likely to attempt to quit and succeed at a quit. So the tobacco industry has really upped their game. In previous studies that we've done, we've found a huge base of data that says that the tobacco industry loves older smokers, focuses on them, and targets them. So now we're beginning to look at, as the tobacco industry rolls out some alternative tobacco products, are they interested in older smokers? And I'm here to tell you, yes, they are. They encourage older smokers to use smokeless tobacco and e-cigarettes. Does everyone know what e-cigarettes are? Okay. And they encourage them to use alternative tobacco products. Alternative tobacco products are marketed for use in non-smoking areas. So as our smoking policies get more successful and there are fewer places to smoke, the tobacco company comes up with alternatives of what you can use to stay addicted to nicotine. The alternative tobacco products are marketed as cessation aids or help for decreasing cigarette consumption, and there's absolutely no science behind that. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but the science that is beginning to roll out shows that it is not effective as a smoking cessation aid, and most people end up as dual users. So this study was a qualitative study. We used focus groups, and we wanted to expand the investigation of looking at alternative tobacco product messages to older adults. This has never been studied. We wanted to characterize older smokers' perceptions of the risks and benefits associated with these products, and we wanted to determine the extent to which perceptions relate to exposure to pro-tobacco, that's the tobacco industry, and anti-tobacco, that's public health. They are getting inundated with both sets of messages, and we all wanted to know what impact that has on their risk perception. So far we've done four focus groups. We plan to do 8 to 10. We also did an online survey of lung cancer patients. My other body of work is looking at lung cancer patients and lung cancer stigma. We recruited smokers and former smokers over 45 by flyers and Craigslist. We transcribed the data double-coded using Excel coding matrix, and participants provided their perceptions of, we gave them pictures of all alternative products, we showed them cigarette marketing examples, we showed them ATP marketing examples, and we showed them some proposed graphic cigarette warning labels to get their responses to them. So, oh yeah, demographics, hot off the press. Okay. Tell Katie I couldn't find the other file. Katie, she couldn't find the other file. Okay. But you can tell them that it is mostly, I can only find, predominantly male, college-educated, more than half Caucasian, and the next largest category is Asian, then African-American. There you go. And participants exposed to tobacco marketing had increased perceptions of benefits and decreased perceptions of risks. So the more tobacco marketing they're exposed to, the more that dynamic of decreased risks and increased benefits is bolstered. 90% of the sample expressed willingness to try new products before trying cessation. They thought that was a really good idea. They had a high interest in e-cigarettes. Ads used nostalgia and glamour very effectively. I'll show you some of that later. And warning labels were not viewed as effective. The majority of participants felt that anti-tobacco public health messaging had nothing to do with them. It's not meant for me, it's about the young people, and it's too late for us. These are messages that we heard. Perception that anti-tobacco images only include older adults as end-of-life patients, often with tracheotomies. So in this vignette, you see they say, I read something on the internet that some guy, it blew up in his face when they're talking about e-cigarettes. I'd rather smoke than have my face blown off. This extract highlights the concerns that people have about e-cigarettes, but it also shows the interest they have in them. There's dozens of cases that have been shown where e-cigarettes have blown up, and that's getting some traction on the internet, and patients are becoming aware of some of the dangers of e-cigarettes. How many of you have seen a e-cigarette has blown up story? Wow, okay, well, I guess it's not getting that much traction. So when you go home, Google, blow up e-cigarette, all right? In this vignette, besides blowing up, the risks of e-cigarettes were discussed pretty consistently in terms of the fact that they're not regulated by the FDA, and they're worried about what's in that water vapor. They're worried about the chemicals that have not been identified, and actually those are very good worries. We're very early in the research, and early results show that there are definite toxins. 5 minutes, okay, I'm talking too much. Let's move on. So also with e-cigarettes, they said they are ubiquitous. They're everywhere, and they used Starbucks as an example. The other thing with e-cigarettes is that they use them as an adjunct to cigarettes because they felt like they couldn't get a big enough hit of nicotine out of them. But what they did say is that e-cigarettes keeps the romance going, and it also supports that physical ritual that they enjoy with smoking cigarettes. And so that they're more interested in e-cigarettes than other alternative products because of these two factors. They talked about the glamour that there used to be with cigarettes. And they sort of all talked about it in a yearning and sort of mournful way. But what they did point out is that, like, back in the 70s when it was okay to smoke everywhere, it's like they took the same campaigns and they put an E in front of the cigarette. It's like, okay, we're starting all over again. And here's some examples I brought for you for e-cigarettes. And it is the same old campaign with an E in front of it. Glamour, sex, fun, it's the good life. Here we go again. They also identified nostalgia as a tactic that the tobacco industry uses to draw them back. It's like coming home and feeling comfortable. If you're a certain age, you remember these situations automatically, but if you're a younger age, it's like, okay, it's grandma's house. So they talked about nostalgia working for not only older folks, but for younger folks. Here's two examples of e-cigarette advertisements. And on the left, you see the diner. This is at the level of a seven-year-old in about 1940s, 1950s. And so they take you right back to where you were, and they welcome you back to the good life. They're welcoming you back to smoking. So with older adults, we're beginning to see not only is it maintaining their smoking, but it's also calling them back, and we're worried about reinitiation. And here's an example of that. I can give you a bad story about that. When they first came out, I had quit, but before I went to the store, I saw one of those anti-smoking ads, and it reminded me about smoking, and I went and bought cigarettes. And then they told us about their friends who went and bought e-cigarettes because it was a safe way to go back to something that they've missed for a long time. They found warnings ineffective. 2 minutes. I don't, you know, it's sort of like Brussels sprouts. I thought this was the best. They compared the warnings to Brussels sprouts. You ignore them. You see them, you know they're there, but you ignore them. You don't buy them, you don't look at the advertisement that says Brussels sprouts $10 a pound. And I think that's the general theme with advertisements, that they either felt like they had nothing to do with them or they just ignored them because they were easy to ignore. I don't know why Brussels sprouts get such a bad rap. So conclusions, older adults are susceptible to industry messaging. Tobacco control targeting for older adults is needed to combat industry messaging. Tobacco control has currently missed an opportunity to expand coverage by targeting older adults. And older adults are very curious about e-cigarettes and other alternative tobacco products. They're vulnerable and they're targeted. What we worry about with tobacco control messages, though, is stigmatizing the smoker. We know it's been the most effective tobacco control mode that we've had, that we've really been able to decrease the prevalence of smoking by making smoking not cool. But what we've done is we've made smokers pariahs. We've stigmatized the smoker, and that stigma has transferred to all tobacco-related diseases. And so Katie and I work with lung cancer patients, we're working with COPD patients, and that stigma is related to really poor patient outcomes. So that brings us to ez.com/lung. We have developed a virtual world lung cancer clinic for lung cancer patients, for older lung cancer patients. They can enter into the clinic. They experience all of the barriers that we experience in a clinic visit: short time, cranky providers, lack of information. And we help them get the information they need to take care of themselves. We're currently in a crowdfunding campaign because it's very difficult to get funding for lung cancer because of the stigma that's attached. ez.com/lung. Stop. Thank you so much for listening to me. How was that?